Ready to connect with the investment community here in Cleveland? Want to learn about the people, events, projects, and firms that are making a difference? Want all that but feel like you don't have the time? This is the show for you. Welcome to Guardians of Finance. Brought to you by the CFA Society of Cleveland and hosted by Matt McLaughlin, portfolio specialist at Diamond Hill Capital Management, Guardians of Finance will provide you with a chance to foster deeper connections and know what is getting the attention of Cleveland's investment community. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform and head to guardiansoffinance.com where you can connect or reconnect with the CFA Society of Cleveland and attend an educational or social event and find volunteer opportunities. And now, here's your host, Matt McLaughlin.
Welcome to the Guardians of Finance podcast. I am your host, Matt McLaughlin. First, I'd like to mention and thank the CFA Society Cleveland's 2025 Asset Manager sponsors, First Trust, Invesco, and State Street Global Advisors. It is due to support from these and other event sponsors that allows the CFA Society to bring engaging content to our members. In this episode, we talk with Andrew Rising and Mike Neesett of Encore Venture Labs. Both Andrew and Mike were born and raised in Northeast Ohio before exploring other parts of the U.S., and then they brought their experiences back to Cleveland. We talk about these experiences and what led them back to Cleveland, as well as what they're doing on Encore Venture Labs in this wide-ranging but informative conversation about venture capital and startups. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode with Andrew Rising and Mike Neesett. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Matt. Excited to be here.
Sure. Maybe let's just jump right in, and we got a lot to get to. I know you guys both have extensive backgrounds in Cleveland and with your company, but maybe let's just start off. Just give us the quick elevator pitch and overview of kind of what you're doing with your company, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, sounds great. And thanks again for having us. So I'm Andrew Rising. I'm the managing partner here at Encore Venture Labs. Encore Venture Labs is a venture studio focused on bridging the gap between the city and this region's industrial heritage with its industrial future. So we'll launch companies 0 to 1 in the sectors in which this city and region are uniquely qualified to compete in on a global scale. So anything in advanced manufacturing, clean power and energy, and the water economy.
Cool. There's a lot there we'll definitely get to, but maybe let's turn real quick and talk about your backgrounds. Michael, over to you. What's your connection to Cleveland? What's your upbringing, and were you born and raised in Cleveland? And kind of what's that original connection to Cleveland?
Yeah, so I don't really talk about this. I don't tell anybody this, but technically I was born in Chicago. My family moved here when I was 1 year old. So 0 to 1, that was my least formative year. So that doesn't even count. But grew up, so for all intents and purposes, I am a Cleveland native. Grew up on the east side in Shaker Heights and stayed in Ohio for quite some time. I went to Ohio State for undergrad, studied finance with a little bit of computer science on the side. And then stayed in Columbus afterwards, did a little bit of consulting with EY, and then I moved back to Cleveland shortly after that and joined KeyBank in their consumer bank product management group. So had a lot of great experience doing that. Spent a bunch of time in Cleveland, was living downtown on West 9th with my wife, having a great time, and really enjoyed the experience of working at Key. So in my role as product manager, at the end of my tenure there, I was responsible for the consumer checking product. So that all in was roughly $20 billion worth of consumer deposits. And I was one of the P&L owners of that. So that was an incredible experience and effectively got to run my own business just within the confines of the broader KeyBank. So while I really enjoyed that whole experience, ultimately I ran into, I guess, some frustrations with the inability to move fast. And so that kind of led me to develop the itch to go try and start something for myself. Figured like, okay, I've proven that I can run a business effectively. Now I want to try and do it for myself. And so I had an opportunity to actually jump out of that role at Key, go pursue my MBA at MIT. So moved to Boston for 2 years. And while I was there, got super deep into all things early stage entrepreneurship. So while I was there, I started a company, took that through an accelerator program, raised a little bit of cash for it. Amazing experience. On the side, I also helped to start and operate student-run, somewhat official accelerator program as well to help support other student founding teams all across MIT who are working to commercialize tech out of labs at MIT work on all kinds of crazy ideas. The program was meant to give people some extra support and guidance to start their company. So really just saw the zero to one game from a whole bunch of different angles. Any sector you can think of, any challenge or mistake you can make, I either made them or saw somebody else make them. So I had a lot of incredible learning opportunities while I was there and while I was running my company. I ended up shutting that down a little over a year ago. And then shortly after that, an opportunity to move back to Cleveland. My wife brought us back. She joined the innovations group at the Cleveland Clinic. Super cool opportunity, one that was worth moving back for. We always planned to come back at some point, but this kind of accelerated that timeline for us. And when I was back, I was looking for ways to use all of that experience I gained throughout the MBA and through running and shutting down my company. Just really wanted to find a way to plug into this ecosystem and figure out how can I take all those learnings that I have and make it so that it's makes sense to build companies here versus elsewhere. And so began just kind of a random walk or an exploration, trying to network with people, understand what this ecosystem needed, what we had, what we didn't have. And very early on in that journey, I met Andrew, who was already well on his way to starting Encore. And I basically told him, I need to join this team. I basically forced my way onto the team. And he was gracious enough to let me tag along for a while. And now here we are.
Cool. Andrew, how about you? What's your original connection to Cleveland?
I am born and raised here at Fairview Hospital. So born and raised on the west side of Cleveland, grew up in Lakewood, North Ridgeville. I went to Ignatius for high school and then studied finance at Ohio U. Given that I was at Ohio University and there tends to be some good times to be had there, I was not getting any looks from the Goldman Sachs structured products division, but that's okay. At that time, I was really more interested in how world-class organizations were constructed and incentivized. And what it really boiled down to was leadership and the decisions that they were making. And so I got really interested in executive search and company building and team building. So I actually jumped into the talent world after school. Because again, in theory, like any one of us, especially your listeners, can quickly do the spreadsheet math on what it takes to increase your gross margin by X percent over a specified time frame. But incentivizing the individuals on those teams to go out and execute on that mission is a little bit more difficult. And so talent drives all businesses. And that's something that's been a core of my background in my entire career. So jumped out to Chicago. Our clients were predominantly in the aerospace and automotive sector. So think like the Northrop Grumman's of the world, the Fords, the North Star Aerospaces, which make like the gears on the Chinook helicopters, fascinating, super interesting businesses. And then after about 2 years there, I had the opportunity to go out to the West Coast and build engineering teams at Google. Did that for a little while and then was able to marry my understanding and passion for finance with my ability to build world-class teams at a company called Addepar. I'm sure some of your listeners have heard of Addepar, given the nature of its business in the wealth management sector. Phenomenal experience there. It was employee 50 right before our Series C, scaled them up to a couple hundred folks, running all of product and eng recruiting, working directly with the CEO, Eric Coye, and CFO and CTO to really define what the objectives are over the next couple of years and what the metrics needed to be in order for us to go out and raise that next round of funding. At this point, I think they're sitting around a $2.2 billion valuation, and I think they have over $6 trillion of assets on the platform. So it's been a ton of fun to watch that thing grow. After that, I jumped into a venture capital firm called Redpoint Ventures, $4 billion AUM funds out there. My office was right on Sand Hill Road in Menlo Park, very fun to experience that and sit in meetings with guys that quite literally sit on the boards of like AT&T and the like. And then later that afternoon, after meeting with them, drive up to our early stage portfolio and then chat with some of the folks that are building their Series A companies up in the Tenderloin District in San Francisco. And it is just a very, very significant contrast. It was very enjoyable and a ton of fun working with the early stage enterprise and consumer tech teams over there.
It sounds like you've started a ton of different companies or been involved in a lot of different early stage startups. Why go from one to the next? And is it by design? They're like, hey, I get a bunch of experiences. Or was it just like, hey, opportunity pops up and I'm going to pursue it? And it just happened a couple of times.
Yeah, it's a good question. So realistically, I went from Google to Addepar, but then in the venture world, you're still part of the venture firm, but you now have exposure to all these different companies, right? And so getting exposure to an entire early stage portfolio, you're just building reps and building like a lot of, I guess, scar tissue, for lack of a better term, of really understanding the chaos that is a 0-1 environment. And that is really like where I find the most enjoyment to me. Like 1-N in maintenance mode and or like slow growth and scaling is somewhat interesting. But when it is entirely chaotic and you're absolutely charging towards this notion of product market fit and figuring out a go-to-market strategy, that to me is just super interesting. So after Redpoint, had the opportunity to partner up with a guy named Archit. We built a recruiting AI company. This is back when GPT was just coming around. This is back in 2017. At that point, it could really only complete like a couple sentences after you gave it one sentence, which still was fundamentally mind-blowing. So started a company, raised a little bit of venture capital for that, ran that for 3 years. Luckily had an exit, which was amazing. The ink on that deal got done on March 2nd, 2020, which is some stroke of luck or whatever higher power it be. So forever thankful for that. Joined a different venture fund after that transaction called Human Capital. Became an operating partner there, working with our early stage portfolio as well. And when I was there, I had the opportunity to move back to Cleveland. It was kind of like middle to end of COVID. And my wife's from a super small town in Minnesota. I'm obviously from here. She and I both realized that we didn't want to build a family in our 1,200 square foot apartment that we were paying an ungodly amount for. And so she said, hey, I love your friends. I love the city. I love the support system that we have. Cleveland seems to be up and coming. Let's move back there. And by the time she was done with that sentence, I was already on the phone with a couple of realtors. And so as I moved back, I really knew I wanted to go start something again. I had been on the venture side. I had been on the founder side. And when you're in VC, the questions that you ask any founding team are typically, one, like, why are you uniquely qualified to build this business and why right now? And I kind of just put those two questions on the city of Cleveland and the Great Lakes region more broadly. And if you look at a lot of the macro trends that we're seeing right now, anything, you know, around geopolitics or socioeconomics or climate, converging with a lot of really interesting technical shifts like AI and the electrification of everything. Then you combine that with just the raw demographics that we have here in the state, being 7th in GDP, 7th in population, 2nd in working age population, and the notion that we have 10,000 plus manufacturing facilities in the state of Ohio alone. A lot of those convergences are really setting up for an interesting next 2 to 3 decades. And so I decided, okay, like, what is my unique qualification and how can I make the most amount of impact if I have the three goals of, one, creating economic development for the city and region in which I was born, two, building sustainable businesses, and then three, having the ability to take asymmetric upside bets. And so all that, after tons of conversations and a lot of random walks, meeting with policymakers, founders, funders, came to the conclusion to build a venture studio, and that venture studio is Encore Venture Labs. Encore in the sense that by virtue of all those macro shifts and all those convergences taking place right now, I think you're really seeing this opportunity to reindustrialize, and it all starts here. So we were this once globally prominent industrial hub, and I think it is our opportunity to take advantage of this second act or our encore.
You guys both have pretty extensive experience in innovation, startups, and whatnot. In your opinion, I don't think Cleveland has been kind of an innovation startup hub over the last, say, 30 or 40 years. What has held the city and region maybe back a little bit, and how could you see that changing going forward, or how are you trying to help that change?
I think some of the main contributors to Cleveland not being a major venture hub to this point is really a lack of talent density and a lack of capital density. I think there actually is a ton of capital here, right? But venture as an asset class is not really in the conversation. And we've encountered this because we're currently out raising our fund right now. We're trying to close it out. And what we're hearing from a lot of people is just there is capital, but it's mostly decked against like private equity and real estate. So it's relatively risk averse money. Venture hasn't really returned the type of capital that would encourage people to continue investing in venture, right? The opportunities to invest in the region, there just haven't been a lot of winners, unfortunately. Now, there have been some great ones for sure. I don't want to take any credit away from them. But what you see in other hubs like a Boston, a New York, a San Francisco are massive wins, and that those wins return capital to that ecosystem. It recycles back in. And of those companies that win, you have people then jumping out of those companies and going to start their own. And so it's kind of this self-fulfilling prophecy where you get some wins, people get their money back and some, and then that spawns the next wave of entrepreneurs. we really haven't seen that here. And so I think why we're trying to build a venture studio here, specifically why this model is, we're using our backgrounds as operators more than investors to try and plug in, identify these killer founders, build businesses in the sectors that we're qualified to build in on a global scale. And we're going to use all of our resources and abilities to kind of artificially stack the deck for those founders to make it so that they can build really interesting, great businesses here and kickstart that flywheel. If we can create some positive outcomes on a relatively short timeline, then that starts the process, right? If we can get some wins, capital flows back into the ecosystem, get more people seeing that it's possible to do it here, more companies start, and so on. And then we're set from there. We just need to solve that cold start problem.
Yeah, that's super interesting from a wealth management. And as I'm sure you guys are raising your fund, you're having these conversations and you probably see that apprehension that maybe you don't see in a Boston or San Francisco of, hey, you know, we're having a venture fund. So maybe just at a very basic level for anyone who doesn't know, what does a venture studio do?
It is not an incubator. It is not an accelerator. I think the way that you think about it is we take on an active co-founder role and then provide longer term support. So we are in the trenches, actually developing these ideas, validating them down to the level at which we have quite high level of probabilistic outcomes around product market fit, customer market fit, and founder market fit before we even incorporate the business. And so to talk about like, where do we get these ideas? Are we all coming up with them? No, ideas come from many, many, many different ways. So typically they're going to be three. One is from academic institutions, which we have a glut of R1 research institutions in the state of Ohio and Case and Ohio State and Kent. And it's actually shocking how fantastic some of these institutions are. Specifically, even Ohio U, where I went, is very, very forward thinking in the unmanned aerial system space, which is an area that we're actively exploring with one of our entrepreneurs presidents. Another area is corporates in the region, right? You've got the Eatons, the Parkers, the Rockwells, the Sherwins, like those types of companies that may want to treat us as an external innovation arm would be another opportunity for us to go and say, okay, like you're looking at this problem to solve. We want to go solve this problem. We have the operational expertise and capability to do so, in hopes that then they would either become a customer or a potential acquirer down the road. Third is going to be typically our entrepreneurs and residents that have some semblance of an idea or a thesis around like their unique qualifications and what they're able to build in. We empower them by creating operational infrastructure and support and help them really navigate this quagmire of diligence and how to really think about stress testing their ideas with customer discovery and rapid prototyping and all that, coming to the conclusion of saying, we will not start a company unless we have a very clear understanding of exactly where this thing goes. And that could be anything from understanding the founder fit, the unique value proposition, the market access, how does the operation scale, and then really being thoughtful around an exit strategy. Because given the nature of this relatively small proof of concept fund, for lack of a better term, we're going to raise $3 million, did our first close at $1 million, so we got to go close the next two. With that, we're going to launch six companies. With only six bullets in the chamber, we have to be right. So I think that's what we get really excited about. And again, it comes from anything around diligence process, operational support, leveraging our network, and then providing capital.
Sure. So it sounds like the pieces are there. You guys are just trying to connect them maybe better than someone else has in the past. Or I don't even know if there's another company out there, companies that have tried to do it in the past. What's the biggest challenge in connecting those pieces, and how are you attacking those challenges, or have you overcome them, or maybe you're in the process of overcoming them?
I think candidly, it's capital. We are well ahead of schedule on everything that we've set out to do for the venture studio in terms of we've got three amazing entrepreneurs and residents on the team already who are chasing after pretty insane ideas, one of which is already generating revenue. We've got another portfolio company that's generating revenue as well. So that's two so far. We're off to the races, except for fundraising, right? We've got enough capital to seed these first three to four companies, but our goal is to have enough capital to start at least six. And as of now, like we're just running into challenges with raising capital locally. And so we're getting to a point where we really don't want to go out to the coasts, because that kind of defeats the purpose. We want wins to benefit everybody here. We want to prove to people here that you can make money and be successful with investing in venture here. But it has been a challenge to get more capital.
Sure. You talk about kind of finding these entrepreneurs who are maybe a little bit undiscovered. How do you guys source these people and these ideas? It would seem kind of tough to say, hey, you know, I see this person walking down the street. They don't have a light bulb shining above their head that they have this great idea. Like, how do you go about attacking that and finding these people? Because I feel like that's part of the secret sauce here is getting those people involved.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to my talent background, right? And understanding that talent drives all outcomes. And to find these three folks, we've had hundreds and hundreds of conversations. Like, this is not a one, you know, okay, like, we're going to launch the venture studio, then we're going to go find a bunch of EIRs. These are relationships that have been built over many, many months and potentially even years, and leveraging networks all the way from my 10 years in the Bay Area all the way to coming back home and knowing what we want to truly do and who could actually be put in the right seats at the right time. So a lot of it is fundamental, like, sourcing. Also, just having a ton of conversations around, okay, like, if you had a blank slate, what would you go build tomorrow? And really stress testing a lot of these ideas, figuring out who can articulately explain how they view the future evolving and where they see themselves in that. And then it's on us to figure out how we can provide the operational lift to ensure that they actually achieve those outcomes.
You know, I feel like maybe because Cleveland's a little bit newer to the venture game, at least in my mind, I would say I'm not an expert either. And when I think of venture and pitches and whatnot, I think of Shark Tank. Like, how similar is a pitch like that when you're going to a big company saying, hey, we have this great entrepreneur that could help your business? Like, how similar that is like a Shark Tank kind of setting in real life for those of us who aren't involved in it on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, personally, it's nothing like it. Typically, there's going to be founders and then investors in a room together. Like, that is typically the main thing. I would say that you get, I guess, on Shark Tank, like, the 5 minute of, like, conversation and everything. Like, it is a 60-minute grill session, realistically. And obviously, you're trying to build a relationship and feel each other out. But at the end of the day, like, you're really trying to understand, again, why, if you're the investor, is this person uniquely qualified to build? And, like, is the timing right such that I'm a venture investor, I know that typically, let's say, 2 to 3 of the companies I invest out of the 30 are probably going to be the ones that actually return the fund. So I have to look at you as a founder and say, okay, like, I'm making this bet that you can potentially build a multi-billion dollar business. And that's a very interesting and unique conversation to be having. And then that's why those relationships get built over quite some time. But yeah, I would say it's very much glamorized and it's very silly on Shark Tank. But at the end of the day, like, you're dealing with hyper sophisticated investors when they're sitting across the table from you, and it's a ton of fun.
Sure. Turning kind of back to the Cleveland connection, both of you born and raised here, went somewhere else for a little while or went to multiple other places and then came back. What was the one thing that sticks out in your mind that when you got back here and say you came back and a year later, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy I'm back here because of, like, what was that one thing you missed that you felt refreshed at or whatever it was that a year after moving back, you were like, whew, okay, this is so much better than Boston or San Francisco or Chicago or wherever it may be.
I think it's the people, right? That's what makes the Midwest so great. Since coming back, I've just been amazed at people's willingness to give you time out of their day just to talk. It doesn't even have to be something transactional, or you don't have to both be gaining something tangible from it. People are willing to sit down with you and talk to you and actually help you. I don't think you really see that as much on the coasts.
Yeah, I think there's this abundance of, like, giving. I definitely appreciate that on the introduction side. Now, like, the capital side's a little bit different. I think that's a whole other story. But at the end of the day, I think there's a really interesting group of boomerangs that are either moving back or are recognizing that, hey, the quality of life here is absolutely amazing. The cost of living is fantastic. With climate change and all the fun stuff happening there, we're playing golf into November, right? Like, that's a good existence. So at any rate, to point one specific person out who's probably more introductions than anyone I've come across is a guy named Jeff Stern. He runs the Lay of the Land podcast. Fantastic dude. He single-handedly has introduced me to more movers and shakers in the city than just about anybody else. And so forever grateful for that. And I think another piece is just, like, the people in those rooms that you probably shouldn't be able to get into are also the ones willing to make those introductions and willing to just have a coffee with you, which I find very, very interesting.
I think you just plugged a rival podcast.
That's bad.
I'm totally joking. I've talked with Jeff before. He does a great podcast. No, we're totally friends. So just joking there. So maybe one last question before we get in kind of a rapid fire, more lighthearted question. other than saying, you know, call you guys for an early stage entrepreneur if they have an idea, what advice would you give someone who's out there who's like, you know, I have this idea, but I'm in Northeast Ohio. I'm not sure if it's good or not. Like, other than calling you guys and having you guys help get it started, like, what advice would you give an aspiring entrepreneur in the Cleveland area or someone considering launching a business here?
Go talk to 100 potential customers. That's it. If you have an idea, it doesn't matter. Ideas are a dime a dozen. It's execution. And if you're going to figure out whether your idea is a good one or not, only way you're going to learn that is by going and actually testing it in the market. Go talk to the people who you think are going to be the customers or users of whatever it is that you want to make and hear from them if they need it or not. If you don't do that, you're just living in the world of hypothetical, and you can spend a lot of time there and spin your wheels for a very long time. But the sooner you get out there and actually collide whatever it is that you want to do with the market, the better off you're going to be. And if it turns out that your idea is not going to work for whatever reason, great. You just saved yourself a whole bunch of time, kill that idea, move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I would frame, especially in a like risk off city, for lack of a better term, is the world is so much more malleable than you think. Like, there's no reason why any kid now can't just go start a business on any type of platform at this point and really stress test a bunch of ideas, right? So early on, I had a hockey gear cleaning business idea. And so I just like spun up a quick website and was checking with folks on my hockey team and their parents if they would use my gear cleaning machine. And like, sure enough, it worked. And now I've got the gear cleaner, and then I bought another machine. And like, you can very quickly just test stuff. If they were to say no, like, okay, then I don't go buy the machine. Like, that's how simple it can be. So I would just like to see more people almost use the scientific method to go out and actually build companies, because it's sorely needed. And I think given the nature of our world being very private equity oriented, I think it behooves us as a city to really lean into a little bit more of like, let's try and think a little bit more innovative and starting things from scratch. You're going to build the raw muscles that will inevitably take you very, very far in this world, whether you go into private equity or in investment banking or you stay on the entrepreneurial path.
Sure. That's good advice. Maybe we'll move now to the little bit more lighthearted, kind of lightning round, rapid fire questions, if that's okay with you guys.
Love it.
All right. Do you guys have nicknames?
Thunder and Lightning.
Shake and Bake.
Shake and Bake. Magic Man, El Diablo. We're figuring them out.
All right. To be determined. Sounds like a lot of options. What's your guys' favorite hobbies?
I would say a new hobby that is becoming a favorite and one that I think might resonate with a lot of the listeners is golf. I officially picked it up this past summer. I wouldn't say I'm good at it. I think I actually have destroyed Andrew's game a little bit. The few times that we've gone out together, he's been abysmal. But I'm having a blast. I know my role. I'm the vibes guy. I'm going to be there with the tunes if that's your thing. Maybe a few beverages or a cigar and just a good time. And maybe like one out of every four shots of mine will be a good one. But as long as you suck fast, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I play a ton of hockey. So there's a thing called Hockey North America around here, which is a ton of fun. I've been playing since I was a young kid, and it's now called Beer League for a very specific reason. And we are just all old and terrible, but it's still a ton of fun. So it's my main release, I would say, outside of work.
What's your favorite book? I usually ask about investing and finance, but maybe I'll extend it to entrepreneurship given your guys' background. So what's a book someone should read if they want to learn a little bit more or be entertained about entrepreneurship?
I would say Disciplined Entrepreneurship. That is the textbook for building a company out of MIT. So that's Bill Ouellette, one of the professors, the executive director of the Entrepreneurship Center at MIT. I had the opportunity while I was there to get pretty close with Bill. I was one of his TAs for his main entrepreneurship course. And the book does a great job of really breaking down, okay, here's how you start a company. It is a scientific process. You run these experiments. If you see good signals, move on to the next thing. And it's all about iterating and testing and getting something out there as quickly as possible so you can figure out if you have something or you don't. I think it's a great read for anybody who's thinking about starting something and doesn't really know where to begin. This is perfect. And I'd say like that book has played a critical role or is a huge influence on me now with Encore. We have an extremely rigorous diligence process that we put any idea or founder through to validate, de-risk anything that we're looking at. And I think that is very much in line with the teachings of that book.
I was just going to jump in with a couple like specific venture books. There's two. One that is relatively dry. It's called Venture Deals by Brad Feld. And it is not the most exhilarating book, as I mentioned, but it gives you a very clear understanding of like how venture works and just the nuts and bolts of it. And then the real one that I most recently found, I think it came out a couple of years ago, it's called The Power Law, Venture Capital and the Makings of the New Future by Sebastian Melby. That one gives a much deeper look into like the history and how everything evolved over time. It's a very interesting read. Highly recommend that one.
What's at the top of each of your bucket lists for travel destinations?
So I actually just booked tickets to go to Mumbai, India. My wife and I have always wanted to go. We have a close friend that we made during our time in Boston who's getting married in February. So we figured this is the perfect opportunity to go there. It's not exactly close, so we kind of need a good reason to go. So we're super excited about that.
Yeah, I think for me, I'd love to get out to Scotland. I am an avid golfer. I have not been out there yet, and birthplace of golf. So I'd like to get out there. I just went to Bandon Dunes this year, which was a phenomenal experience. So I'm hopeful that it would be surpassed and across the pond.
Any hidden talents?
So my family originally, like the old like generations of Rising, were all in the concrete business. So I can actually finish concrete quite well. I would say it's probably my secret hidden talent. If all this venture stuff doesn't work out, I can go lay some concrete.
There you go. You got a fallback plan for if AI takes your job or takes over your company.
Exactly.
I think mine actually complements that nicely. So I've discovered a newfound passion for and somewhat of an ability to be basically a carpenter. So how that works in practice is I just built a like 6-seat bar in my basement from scratch, which was a pretty incredible. It was extremely difficult, but it's super cool. There's nothing more satisfying than a crisp, cold one sitting at your own bar that you built. So maybe Andrew and I will just build houses if this all doesn't work.
Yep.
There you go. Favorite lunch spot in Cleveland?
I'm partial to the supermarket. I'm a big soup guy, grilled cheese and tomato soup. Nothing better on a cold day.
I've seen him get soup from this place when it's 80 degrees outside.
Cold day or warm day, either one.
Freaks me out. So our office is located on the corner of West 25th and Lorain here in Ohio City. So we're surrounded by tons of fantastic lunch spots. We have the West Side Market right by us. Then we've also got like Dave's Cosmic Subs, which is classic. Ohio City Burrito, also very good. So some really solid local spots around here.
What's your favorite Metro Park?
Mine is a place out in Richfield called Furnace Run. My dad and I have been going there for just about 35 years since he could carry me. And I actually just took my 6-month-old daughter there for the first time 2 weekends ago. So it's been in our family for quite some time.
For me, I don't even know if this counts as a Metro Park. There's a park out in the east side in Chagrin, West Chagrin Reservation. My wife and I have done countless hikes, walks, runs through there. It's just a nice little getaway.
What show are you watching right now? If you're watching it on Netflix or Andrew the Young Kid, Disney, you know, Disney's fine to cite there. Or what show are you watching right now?
Right now, it's kind of a mix. Like I kind of need to just dumb my brain after a long day. So I have to say we were on season 6 of Cobra Kai on Netflix, which is quite good as someone that grew up watching like The Karate Kid. It's actually a pretty good job. They do a fun job of making it relevant and new.
I find that I get sucked into the HBO classics every once in a while. So I'm on a regular rotation right now. I'm halfway through making my wife watch Sopranos for the first time ever. It's probably my like 6th time through. And then on the side, when I have time, which is rare these days, but also I've been enjoying a rewatch of The Wire.
Nice. What's your most memorable Cleveland sports moment?
Positive or negative?
Yes.
One of each.
I would say positive. It's kind of both. I mean, both are going to be Indians or baseball at that point. So when Rajay Davis hit that shot, me eighth to tie it up against the Cubs, that I'll never forget that moment as like I was recently just started dating my now wife, and that was the first time I think she saw me express emotion in such a way that I like hit the wall of my house and knocked down, I think, every painting that was up and just shattered a bunch of other glasses. So that was just raw emotion. And then on the other side of things, I think the unfortunate Game 7 of the World Series in 97, just absolute soul crushing for 8-year-old me. I remember being at my uncle's house with all the family and all of us were so excited and just absolutely gutted by the end of that thing.
Mike, how about you?
I think mine is not a positive. It's probably more of a negative, but the most iconic Cleveland sports moment that I've been able to witness in person was the infamous Myles Garrett helmet swing. So I was in the stands for that, and it was truly wild. We didn't really realize at the time what happened. We just saw, oh, there's a fight on the field, and naturally, like, you're amped up, right? Wind Steelers, good, that's what I want to see. But then after the fact, we realized, whoa, that was interesting. That was a little something.
Got a little out of control. So is that your both positive and negative sports moment then? Or do you have a negative memory there that sticks out?
Just anytime I think about the Browns, my brain is just flooded with negative emotions. I think there's one other really scarring memory, which is the recent playoff game against the Chiefs that we lost by a touchdown. And there was a specific point in that game where I think it was Rashard Higgins who was extending the ball to try and break the play and score a touchdown. He was hit in the incredibly illegal way, the most obvious targeting of all time. I think helmet to helmet, it forced him to fumble the ball out of the end zone, touchback, terrible rule. Chiefs are a terrible football team that's rigged against us and rigged in their favor. I'll never forgive them for that. And we went on to lose by one touchdown. So I'm not mad though.
Not bitter at all. Maybe I'm guessing in future podcasts, someone's going to bring up the most negative sports moment is the day Deshaun Watson signed his contract, because
100%.
Maybe at the time we didn't know it, but man, that has been a tough one, and hopefully we can get rid of it somehow, but I don't know.
In our business, our entire job is to diligence ideas and kill 99% of the ideas that come across our desk. If that would have gone through the Encore diligence process, that would have been a hard no. Very early on.
There you go. Well, guys, that's all the rapid fire questions I have. Thanks for joining the podcast, and hopefully we see you at a CFA event sometime soon. Maybe the golf outing, given Mike's new hobby.
I'll have to take some more lessons before that.
Yeah, as long as everyone's wearing helmets, that sounds good.
Thanks, guys. All right,
thanks so much, Matt. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Guardians of Finance, brought to you by the CFA Society of Cleveland. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform and head on over to guardiansoffinance.com, where you can connect or reconnect with the CFA Society of Cleveland, attend an educational or social event, and find volunteer opportunities. Thanks, and we'll see you next time on Guardians of Finance.